Freundlicher Applaus im Aula-Foyer beendete kurz nach 11 das Sehen und Gesehenwerden der anderen Promis im Festsaal. Spätestens als Tony Blair, flankiert von Hans Küng und Rektor Eberhard Scheich, sportlich über die Bühnentreppe federte, saßen alle erwartungsvoll. Der Tübinger Rektor gab dann auch gleich die Tonlage vor, die hier in den nächsten 2 Stunden vorherrschen sollte. Freundlich, vor allem aber familiär.
Dear Mr. Blair, we would like to share your and your family's joy at the birth of your son Leo.
Hans Küng zitierte zum Warming-up nochmal die Standardfrage, die nicht verstummte, seit Tony Blairs Redezusage öffentlich heraus war. Was treibt einen britischen Premierminister dazu, in einem deutschen Ort, kleiner als jeder Londoner Bezirk, die erste Vorlesung über Weltethos zu halten? Es waren, Küng hat sein Licht noch nie unter den Scheffel gestellt, natürlich vor allem die persönlichen Kontakte zwischen ihm und Blair. Immerhin war sich wohl auch Küng nicht ganz sicher gewesen, ob ein aktiver Staatsmann wagen würde, das Thema anzugehen. Umso dankbarer bat er Blair denn auch um seinen Redebeitrag.
Dear Prime Minister, ladies and gentlemen, what may motivate an active Prime Minister of the United Kingdom to come to Tübingen? What makes him move out of his tremendously burdening government obligations and out of his recently increased family duties to come to our city smaller than any single borough of London, to our university and to our Global Ethic Foundation? This kind of questions was put to me by most of the people who heard of this invitation. One thing I know for sure, you did not come here to get votes in Britain. I know 3 things for sure. First, I cannot hide that the personal relationship between Tony Blair and myself lies at the basis and encouraged me as president of the foundation to address this invitation to him. Even before meeting each other for the first time, our relationship started through books, especially the book on being a Christian, and Tony Blair's encounter with his book brought him to meet the person behind. Third, Tony Blair is a politician who is convinced of the fact that politics needs an ethical basis, and who is constantly struggling with the question how the relationship between politics and ethics should be expressed in practice. He considers the idea of a global ethic as a particularly valuable contribution to this search, and this is where the concerns of both of us meet most obviously. Ladies and gentlemen, we are privileged and honored that Prime Minister Tony Blair has accepted our invitation, and I would like to express my deep gratitude to him. The special value of his comings lies in the fact that the attempts to speak about global politics and global ethics, that he does this as an active statesman. Tony Blair represents a new kind of politician who tries to combine visionary thinking and political pragmatism. We are eager to hear him speak about the challenges of his promising approach to politics. I would now like to ask the Prime Minister of Great Britain, Tony Blair, to present his lecture.
Oxford-Absolvent Tony Blair begann artig. Seine erste Referenz galt Hans Küng und Gastort Tübingen mit seiner Universität.
It is an honor, my honor, to come and speak at Tübingen University and to speak alongside Hans, whose writings will be known to you very well. I have read many of the things that he has written, but I would recommend to you particularly a lecture he gave at St. Paul's Cathedral in London just a few weeks ago as one of the best and most imaginative pieces of writing about the modern world that I have read in a long time. So it is my pleasure to come and sit alongside you, Hans. I'm also particularly pleased because Tübingen is not just a renowned centre of scholarship and science that has long been and remains at the forefront of Europe's intellectual development, but it is also the city twinned with my own constituency in County Durham in the north of England, which I have represented for 17 years in the UK Parliament. So I bring greetings from my constituency to all of you here.
Was folgte, war eine Tour d'horizon vom globalen Wandel bis hin zur Rolle der Religionen in diesem Wandel, angereichert durch die Tagesordnung des nächsten G8-Gipfels in Japan in 3 Wochen. Was Blair vor den Ohren des Publikums ausbreitete, war nicht unbedingt neu, aber eben eine authentische Variante seiner Ideen von der neuen Mitte. Es gibt keine rechte und keine linke Politik, meint Blair, sondern nur richtige und falsche. Die Globalisierung kommt, ob wir wollen oder nicht. Frage ist, steuert sie uns oder steuern wir sie? Seine Botschaft, wir müssen die Globalisierung managen, aber das geht nur auf der Grundlage von Werten. Und Tony Blair lässt sich dabei vom Grundsatz der Gleichwertigkeit lenken. Politik soll allen gleiche Chancen ermöglichen und dabei spielt Bildung eine entscheidende Rolle.
Here is the point and where the global ethic comes in. We cannot manage change unless there are rules and principles of management. Values that guide us as to how and why we are managing change in a particular way. And here, we must resolve an apparent conflict between old and new, between the modernizers and the traditionalists. Let me explain what I mean. The traditionalist mourns the passing of the old familiarities, points to the greater stability of family life in the past, points to the ugliness, to the disorder often of the modern world. Yet the moderniser sees its opportunities, rejects the prejudices of the past, the old hierarchies, is impatient to grasp the material benefits modernity brings. And you know, in politics, the fascinating thing is that there is left and right in both camps. There is a traditionalist left that hates global finance, a traditionalist right that fears the immigrant. There is a modernizing left that sometimes too easily shrugs off the threat to family life. There's a modernizing right that believes in the supremacy of market forces. Now, how do we resolve that conflict between the modern and the traditional? The resolution lies in applying traditional values to the modern world, leaving outdated attitudes behind, but rediscovering the essence of traditional values and then letting them guide us in the management of change. The theologians among you might say it is reuniting faith and reason. What are these values then? For me, they are best expressed in the modern idea of community. At the heart of community is the belief in the equal worth of all, the central belief that drives my politics, and in our mutual responsibility in creating a society that advances such equal worth. Note I say equal worth, not equality of income or outcome, neither simply equality of opportunity. Rather, equal worth affirms our equal right to dignity, to liberty, freedom from discrimination, as well as economic opportunity. The idea of community resolves the paradox of the modern world. It acknowledges our interdependence. It recognizes our individual worth. So, let us see how that principle then applies to modern government. We embrace change. We do so on the basis of building a community where citizens are of equal worth. Opportunity to all responsibility from all is, in my view, the way a nation achieves community today. On top of it, then has to be built a modern economy whose raw material today is knowledge, skills, the aptitude and intelligence of people. And here there certainly is a political divide. So for me, the challenge is to use the power of community acting together to break down the barriers holding back opportunity for all. And I believe the single most important priority, economic and social today, for all our governments right round the world is education. Not just excellence for all, but learning, not just at school, but throughout the course of our lives. When the Berlin Wall stood, it was the arms race that occupied the leading nations of the world. Today, I believe, it is the knowledge race that will determine success or failure.
Blair möchte seine Grundsätze auch als Konzept internationaler Politik verstanden sehen. AIDS, Malaria, TB, die Bekämpfung dieser Krankheiten betrachtet er ebenso als Aufgabe von Weltpolitik wie die Bekämpfung der Kriminalität, Abrüstung, Umweltschutz oder die Ordnung neuer Technologien. Konnte man bei diesem Redeteil am stärksten den Eindruck haben, Blair wiederhole Zeitgeist Standards, wurde er zum Schluss noch einmal persönlicher, bekannte sich zu den religiösen Wurzeln seiner Wertewelt, plädierte für eine Grammatik des Zusammenlebens, die es zu lernen und zu vermitteln gelte. Und immer wieder fiel auch hier das Begriffspaar Rechte und Verantwortung. Wir würden wohl sagen Rechte und Pflichten des Bürgers in einer modernen Gesellschaft, einem modernen Staat.
There is something else we can do as well. And I mention this because I'm speaking here in Tübingen and have Hans Kung alongside me. We can also do our best to overcome the religious divisions that still threaten our peace. There is a contradiction, is there not, between trying to renew the doctrine of community politically and ignoring the dimension of interfaith understanding. Faith and reason are not opponents, but partners. In the past, and increasingly today, we value the role religions play in promoting peace. Peace and religion have not always been fellow travellers, it is true, but today, with greater understanding between religions, a more just and peaceful world is ever closer. We live in an era rich with examples of interreligious dialogue. The Pope's recent pilgrimage to Jerusalem springs to mind when Jews and Muslims and Christians met in a spirit of fraternity. Equally poignant and closer to Tübingen's cultural experience was the signing last year of that great milestone in Lutheran-Catholic understanding, the Joint Declaration on the Doctrine of Justification. Such examples give great hope and send a clear sign to the world that faiths will not allow their doctrinal differences to stand in the way of greater cooperation. I believe religious dialogue and understanding is essential to peace in our world. Ignorance creates fear, and fear creates conflict. Such dialogue does not have to deny or trivialize differences, but it should look at the common elements in faith. Our global community is like a tapestry. Individual threads at its back, an intelligible picture at its front. All our faiths make up our global community, but they are all different ways of pondering the same fundamental question, the nature of existence. And I would say to you that if it is true that it is only by clear commitment to shared ethics and values that we survive and prosper in this world of change, then surely religious faith has its own part to play in deepening such commitment. What is faith but belief in something bigger than self? And what is the idea of community but the rational acknowledgement of our own interdependence? In truth, faith is reason's ally. And yes, it is true that religion has often resulted in bigotry, but so has politics. However, a society where there is religious faith will always, in my view, be inherently more likely, finally, to pursue the good of humankind. And the less it sees reason as its enemy, the quicker it will get there. But then how religion modernizes itself is a topic for another time and another speaker. Religions can help to make our communities communities of values. The inevitability of globalization demands a parallel globalization of our best ethical values, not a distilling or unnecessary uniformity of the rich values that make up our communities of faith, but agreement around the basic premises of our faiths: solidarity, justice, peace, the dignity of the human person. And that is what we need in this age of globalization. So, to conclude, traditionally, those values I've just mentioned now were religious values. But we now know, through several quite different disciplines, that they are universal values. And I believe they are rooted in this notion of community. Economists call them social capital. Evolutionary biologists call them reciprocal altruism. Political theorists call them communitarianism or civil society. But each of these phrases stands for what is really quite a simple idea: that what gives us the power to survive in a rapidly changing world are the habits of cooperation and the networks of support, our radius of trust. And we learn those habits in families, schools, congregations, and communities. It is there that we learn the grammar of togetherness, the give and take of rights and responsibilities. It is there that we pass on our collective story, our ideals, from one generation to the next. Without them, without these values, society is too abstract to be real. Community is where they know your name and where they miss you if you're not there. Community is society with a human face. And that is what we need at times of change. It is an extraordinary fact, and a moving one, that our great faith traditions have survived while political, economic, and social systems have come and gone. Wherever you find a group that has managed to break free of the encircling bonds of poverty and deprivation, there you will invariably find strong families, strong associations, strong communities of faith. It is there that we discover that a crisis shared is a crisis halved, and a celebration shared is a celebration doubled. So my argument to you today is that traditional values and change are not enemies but friends, because it is precisely at the epicenter of change that we need the human foundations of stability. It's when the winds blow strongest that we need the deepest roots. When we know we are not alone, we can face the future without fear. And it is that sense of community, those shared global ethical values, that allow us to do so. It is those values that sustain communities. And it is in a new world that global values, reaching out beyond national frontiers, reaching out beyond narrow ideological horizons, can guide us to our destination, a more peaceful, secure, and prosperous world for us all. Thank you very much indeed.
Hatte Blair zur Begrüßung noch eine Standing Ovation erhalten, blieben die Gäste zum Schluss seiner Rede bezeichnenderweise sitzen. Manch einer hatte sich sicher mehr versprochen, als die Rhetorik des britischen Premiers hielt. Daran konnten auch Hans Küngs freundliche Nachfragen zu heiklen Themen wie Putin-Besuch, Kosovo-Krieg und Raketenabwehr und die Chance des Publikums, Fragen zu stellen, nichts ändern. Aber so ist das wohl, wenn man für die Tübinger Weltethos-Rede einen aktiven Staatsmann gewinnt. Hier wird die Stiftung langfristig wohl grundsätzlich entscheiden müssen, was sie will. Substanz oder ein volles Haus.